The gospel reading is from the book of John, chapter 10. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand, who is not the shepherd and does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and runs away, and the wolf snatches them and scatters them. The hired hand runs away because a hired hand does not care for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me. Just as the Father knows me, and as I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that do not belong to this fold. I must bring them also, and they will listen to my voice. So there will be one flock, one shepherd. For this reason, the Father loves me, because I lay down my life in order to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have power to lay it down, and I have power to take it up again. I have received this command from my Father. The word of the Lord.
When you think of the key symbol of the Christian faith, you think of the cross, obviously. That is the symbol for us of self-sacrificing love, of death that leads to new life. All you young people got to make these incredible crosses that are on display out there in the lobby, because that is the symbol of who we are. That's the basis of the faith that you're confessing today. But I think it was interesting that in the early church, it took a while for the cross to catch on as the central symbol. For the early church, it was this. Give me this slide. You can keep that up the whole sermon. The Good Shepherd. That was the image of Jesus that they had that was popular. They had statues like this. They would paint it on their walls. They'd put it in mosaic tiles on the floors of their churches. Interestingly, according to the way Jesus was talking today, this too is a symbol of self-sacrificing love, of death that leads to new life. When Jesus said, "I am the good shepherd," he's combining two very interesting and diverse points of view. Jesus often made "I am" statements. I'm the good shepherd, I'm the vine, I'm the bread of life. That I am had deep resonances with the Old Testament. Remember the story where Moses was called to lead the Israelites out of slavery, and he met God at a burning bush, and God gave him his new job description: go to Pharaoh, set my people free. And Moses, like all of us, started making excuses, thinking, I can't do this, I'm not good enough to do this. And as always, he comes up with the craziest excuses. He says, you know, if I go and tell them that I have had a vision from God, they're going to want to know what God I was talking to. They're going to want to know your name. So tell me your name so that I can have these people have confidence in me. And what can God say about his name? I'm Charlie? I'm Alice? Not at all. God cannot be confined or bound by that. So God says, I am. I just am. I'm reality. I'm existence. I am who I am. Go back and tell him that name. So when Jesus makes all these I am statements, he's identifying with this God of power and the universe and control beyond anything we can imagine. But then he joins it to this very beautiful image of I'm the good shepherd who lays down his life for the sheep. An image that's intimate, that's personal, that is one of care. And that's who Jesus was. Heaven and earth were bound. God and humanity were bound together. The God of the universe and us were bound together. And at the very heart, underlying each of our lives, Jesus is saying there is a love that will not let you go, that will lay itself down for each and every one of us. That's why the translation of I am the good shepherd may not even be enough. The word could be translated, I am the genuine, I am the real deal good shepherd. It could also be translated as, I am the beautiful shepherd, because I am revealing the beauty of God's life. Now, it'd be nice to be to just focus on this nice warm image, and that's the popular image we have of this good shepherd. There's a zillion paintings of it, right? And they don't look anything like this. They have Jesus with his long hair and his nice robes, and he's holding this perfectly white little lamb who's snuggling into him there. It's like Jesus is going and having a good time at the petting zoo. But Jesus doesn't come up with that kind of image. This is the kind of image that Jesus has of the Good Shepherd, a young man who's strong, who's there taking care of the sheep, and who may actually have to die for the sheep. Why do we have to bring in this image of death when we talk about the Good Shepherd? I kind of thought when I was doing this, why do I have to be talking about death on Confirmation Sunday? But that's what is the mark of our faith. That is what our God has done for us. That's why we even have a faith to confirm here. But we need to be clear about what we're talking about with death, because sometimes we can romanticize it and get confused by it. We like to think that death, laying down your life for someone else, is the ultimate sacrifice. And in many cases it is. And our lives have been blessed by those who have done that and who are still placing their life in danger. But if you look at history, getting people to lay down their lives doesn't seem to be that hard a thing to do. And it isn't always something that leads to life. You know, tens of thousands of people were willing to lay down their lives for Hitler and what he represented. And Nazi Germany did not represent life. It represented horror and death such as we've rarely seen. Those people who piloted the planes that flew into the Twin Towers on 9/11, they were willing. Somebody got them convinced to lay down their lives for their vision of God, and they thought they were doing a good thing, but it just created terror and images of horror that just are seared into our brains. So just because we lay down our life does not mean that it leads to life. We need to go to a deeper level and see what this means. One of the best things that explained this to me was, I've told this story before, but it just perfectly gets to it. Years ago, a young couple came to me, and the wife was furious at her husband because there had been a three-day weekend, and she wanted to take her family and go visit her parents, but her husband wasn't exactly thrilled with the family, so he didn't want to go, but so she took their young kids, and they went and spent the weekend. She was shocked to come back 3 days later and find out that her husband, because he was bored, because he was lonely, had spent all 3 days down south at the casino south of Mandan. And over 3 days, he had literally blown tens of thousands of his family's money, dollars of his family's money. Blown, you know, what should pay for a house, what should pay for their transportation, what should be his kids' college fund. And of course, when you get dragged in front of the pastor, you feel remorseful, and he was weepy, and he was filled with guilt and shame, and he kind of tried to justify his action, and he came up with this astonishing statement. He said, "I know I blew it with the money, but my kids know I would die for them. They know that I would lay down my life for them." And I wanted to jump out of my chair and shake him. I couldn't do that. But I told him what I was thinking. He said, "Your kids do not need you to die for them. They need you to live a life that will bring life to them. That's what they need." In a way, he thought it would be kind of an easy out, a kind of a romantic way. If I could die sacrificially for my kids, then all of this would be forgiven. The death he needed to die was he needed to die to his addiction to gambling. He needed to die to his pride and whatever hurt he was trying to cover up so that he could go and get treatment and become the kind of father that his family and his kids needed so that they could live. What kind of death do you need to die so that there can be more life in this world? How many of you need to die to your pride so that a relationship can live, so that you can go to somebody and say, "I'm sorry, I was wrong"? How many of you need to die to some kind of sense of arrogance, some sense of needing to be right all the time, so that you could go to somebody that you deeply hurt and are estranged from, and they're hurting because of it, and say, "Will you forgive me?" How many of you need to die to the fear or whatever else it is that would enable you to be able to say to somebody who has hurt you deeply and who is hurting deeply because they have done that, and look at them in the eye and say, "I forgive you"? That's the kind of death that is very real, that we need to die so that there can be life in this world. That gives us a different way of looking at the cross, too. I like to speculate that maybe Jesus, what would have happened if Jesus had a conversation with his Father that went something like this before he had to face the cross? He said, "Father, you and I are one. I've been in this world as your obedient son. I've trusted you. I've taught these people everything that I could about what your will is and how they should live to be in communion with you, and they just don't get it, and they go their own stupid, hurtful ways." And Jesus finally just goes, "Father, I guess we're just going to have to let them suffer the consequences of how they're living." He would have had every right to do that. He says, I've done my best here, but they're not getting it. Just let them go. And the Father shakes his head and says, "No, because that would mean I would lose my children. That would mean death for all of them, and that is not acceptable." So the Father says, "We must show them a different way, a better way, my way." The God who they think is judging them and who is cruel and is always looking over their shoulder and is angry and mad at them, that God needs to die, because that is not the God I am. And so Jesus goes to the cross and lets go of his rights, lets go of his ability to judge, lets go of even his ability to be angry at the people who kill him, because when he's dying, he literally says to his murderers, "Father, forgive them." The angry, judging, hateful God dies on that cross. And 3 days later, the God of life and love and forgiveness rises again. And that is the only God that is alive and real at the heart of the universe right now. And that God of love and life and new beginning is a shepherd. And he's going out far and wide because, as he said, "I want everyone to be in my flock, and I'm going to search them out until they are all one and know the one true God of life and love and joy." And that's why we call that shepherd good. Amen.